Today on Blue 58, we got to meet the Packers' two newest additions today. What did they have to say during their first appearances in Green Bay? And what else might be out there at the Packers' positions of need?
Blue 58!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue 58, the one and only podcast of thepowersweep.com. I'm your host, John Meerdink, and I'm happy to be with you here for another episode. We got to hear from Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney today. Friday the 15th of March, for the first time ever, kind of fortuitous here, was in a bit of a donut hole with what to do for podcast stuff. We've been trying to get our draft stuff going, but the Packers decided to go a little bit crazy in free agency. Still a surprise, even if not an entirely unexpected one. I think the consensus opinion on this podcast, at least for most of the offseason, has been that the Packers have money or were positioning themselves to spend in free agency. So I say that and say that and say that. And then when they go and actually do it, it feels weird. But here we are. The Packers have spent and spent pretty big in free agency so far, bringing in Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney. So I think in the interest of kind of keeping all of our draft start stuff at about the same spot, we're going to talk a little bit more about Jacobs and McKinney today, having heard from them for the first time as members of the Green Bay Packers. The first guy we got to hear from today was Josh Jacobs. He said some really good stuff about Green Bay and why he picked here. A lot of it you probably would expect, but one thing I did not expect to see or hear, even though it's obvious in retrospect, is that in addition to being excited about playing with the young talent on the Packers offense, in addition to playing for Matt LaFleur, in addition to playing with Jordan Love, he was really excited to work with Rich Bisaccia.
Coach Bisaccia, he was, I'm not going to lie, he was one of the main reasons that I was kind of like wanting to come here too. Just knowing that he was already here and just dealing with him in the past, man, we've always had a tight relationship. You know, that year where he was head coach, we had a lot of like real conversations. We sat down, we talked about life and everything. So to be able to, be around him and that energy that he has every day, I think it's going to be fun.
It must be fun because a lot of people say similar things like that about Rich Bisaccia. But, of course, the special teams coordinator, even if he is a good guy to be around, is probably not going to be your primary reason for signing with a team. So in addition to the millions of dollars that the Packers gave Josh Jacobs, playing with Jordan Love is a big, big thing. And this is something that Jacobs has mentioned, Xavier McKinney mentioned that a little bit. Devondre Campbell was mentioning it back at the start of last season as to just why people should be on the lookout for what Jordan Love could bring to the Packers. Jacob said that even prior to prepping for their game against the Packers last year, they were aware of what Love was doing, which is interesting because Love wasn't playing particularly well, I think, at that point in the season. But Jacob says the talent was evident even at that point.
Really, I was telling people, man, we were scouting from when we was playing them last year. I seen him make some throws. I'm like, yeah, a lot of people can't do it. I like running backwards on one foot and slinging it on a dime. That kind of got me excited when I just started thinking about him, like watching film on him. And just to see the way he throws the ball effortlessly and the like grit he plays with, I'm very excited to play with.
Of course, Jacobs doesn't just come to the Packers in a vacuum here. His arrival in Green Bay was facilitated in part by the departure of Aaron Jones, who briefly with Jacobs made one of the most interesting running back duos in the league. Unfortunately, it didn't last. Nothing good can last, unfortunately. But he had very good things to say about Aaron Jones, as he knew of Jones and knew Jones pretty well for a while. They trained together at times in the offseason. But he talked about the struggle of replacing a guy like Aaron Jones. And he never really, he said pretty explicitly that he doesn't want to try to replace Jones. He's just going to come in and try to be his own guy. And part of that is the leadership, part of being a veteran player on this team and a highly played player, a guy who's going to be a big part of the Packers offense. So what does leadership look like to Josh Jacobs?
To me, it's easy, man. You just come in and earn a guy's respect. And you do that by, going to work, putting in the work in. And, once you earn a guy's respect and they see the way you go about business on a day-to-day basis, that's kind of how you step into that role. It's not really something that you kind of ask for. It's just kind of something that's shown.
And this is something that I wanted to pull on and had in my notes even prior to getting to hear from these guys today. It's something I wanted to talk about. This leadership aspect of Aaron Jones' departure, I don't want to say it's overblown, but it's also something I think we're probably fixating on it in the wrong ways. Now, leaders are important to football teams and to any organization, and I don't want to diminish the idea of Aaron Jones as a leader and what he brought to the Packers, but I think there's maybe been a little bit too much worry about the leadership vacuum that Jones' departure is going to leave in Green Bay, because I think these are the sort of things that are naturally filled organically and well by strong teams. And I think the Packers right now are a very strong culture team. You've got Brian Gutekunst, who's been setting the tone for this team for a while now, really coming down hard and implementing his vision of the Packers here these last couple of years. Matt LaFleur earns himself a lot of cachet over the last 2 years with the success the Packers have had, but also the success they had last year in particular. And then just the young core of players being together, I think, creates naturally a pretty strong organization, especially when you're playing well. And it just, I think, gives us an opportunity to reflect on what being a leader on a football team really means. I think as fans, we're probably too eager to look for season-to-season leadership continuity than players and teams actually are. I think when you actually get into a building and get on a team, and I'm just guessing here because I haven't been on a professional football team, but it seems pretty clear that every season is a pretty discrete unit. You do have the bad tends to bleed over from season to season more than the good stuff, but if you have a good culture, you're going to be pretty strong culturally from season to season. It's not necessarily carrying over as much as it is just a new version of something that you've had before. So that kind of background being established, I think the Packers are in a good spot to just produce their own leaders naturally. And this is something that would have to happen sooner or later regardless. I mean, Aaron Jones wasn't going to be a leader in Green Bay forever. That leadership role comes with a shelf life. It's something that's going to expire eventually just because either your contract is going to expire and the team isn't going to renew it, or you're going to retire because you don't want to be a professional football player anymore or don't want to put in the work, or you're sick of it, you're sick of getting tackled, your body can't hold up, or you're just going to get moved out of the team just because of some combination of those other things. They don't want to keep you around anymore for age or injury reasons, or your cap number is too big, or any number of things. There's a regime change in your team, and they just want to go in a different direction. They want, you know, bigger, stronger running backs as opposed to the slight willowy kind. I don't know. But you're not going to be a leader with the team that you are a leader for forever. So teams are going to have to produce a new leader. And there is going to be a new leader produced on this Packers team. And this, from that perspective, understanding that it's going to happen one way or another, this could actually be another good thing for this young Packers team. All right, Aaron Jones isn't here to be the leader anymore. David Bakhtiari isn't here to be the elder statesman on the offensive line anymore. There's nobody here to set the tone who has set the tone previously. It's going to have to be somebody new. So who's going to step up and do it? Who is going to become that leader, either by example or by, you know, being a vocal leader? Jacob seems to have the right mentality here, but it could be Jacobs. It could be somebody else. You don't know, but it's going to happen sooner or later, and Jones' departure raises that opportunity. That's a bit of an aside taking us away from Jacobs, back to Jacobs himself. How does he fit with this Packers team? We talked a little bit about discussing things with Matt LaFleur and getting into the playbook a little bit, but he brought up a couple things about his fit with the offense, specifically catching the ball.
And I was telling him, man, I feel like I want to catch it a little more. I feel like, you know, I didn't get to show that as much as I would like. So that's definitely something, the conversation that we had. I know, like, you know, the schemes out here, they kind of do a lot of, you know, outside zone running. So I think it just fits me, man. I can't wait to get in and, you know, kind of fill it out and see where I fit in. But also, you know, try to leave my mark on it too.
That's something we haven't necessarily talked about all that much when it comes to Jacobs as a receiver. There is a little bit of a contrast between him as a receiver and Aaron Jones as a receiver. The last couple of years, the majority of Jones' catches have actually been behind the line of scrimmage. We have this, I think, impression of Jones as a more downfield receiver than he really was these last couple of years in Green Bay because of how the Packers used him earlier in his career, particularly early in the Matt LaFleur era. But Jacobs, while he doesn't necessarily go deep either, does a lot of stuff beyond the line of scrimmage that Jones didn't necessarily do. And I know that scouting based on highlight tapes is not good practice, but you see it show up a lot in Jacobs' highlights. A lot of his valuable receptions are in the screen game. He's very good as a broken field runner. I think there's something to that idea of getting him involved as a receiver more than he has been in his career. In fact, if you're looking for a use case, it's probably more along the lines of what A.J. Dillon was supposed to be to this point in his NFL career, just this guy who can get the ball on the perimeter and essentially start a running play from there, utilize blockers downfield, be tough to bring down in the open field. That's what Jacobs has been in his NFL career, and I think that's what he is going to have a chance to do in Green Bay, even if he's not, you know, motioning out of the backfield like Aaron Jones did, or lining up in the slot, or lining up out wide and then motioning into the backfield. I think there are still some good things you can do with him as a receiver that he maybe has not had just tons of opportunities to do so far in his career. He also talked a little bit about his mentality as a player, and this is just a little segment I want to present basically without contact or comment here. What does he think of when he's thinking of how he approaches a given running play?
I look at football kind of like chess, especially because the defender's got to react to me because I'm an offensive player. And so, you know, I just kind of try to play my games, whether I might run you over one play or make you miss the next. That's kind of like what I get into.
But most importantly, we got something of an answer about the biggest question here. What number is Josh Jacobs going to wear in Green Bay?
It's still in the works. Everybody keep asking me. So I kind of really don't know. I got to really see what's available. You know, if I can get 8, you know, I'll make it worth it for him. You know what I'm saying? If it's possible, you know. But if not, you man, I'm good either way.
I would just like to see how that transaction goes down between Josh Jacobs and Sean Clifford. If he wants to wear number 8 as he did his final year with the Las Vegas Raiders, that would be kind of interesting. But if he picks a different number, I'm interested in that as well. And we're interested in this, Josh, because there's no football to see until September. So we got to see what you want to do right now. Let's see what the number is. Let's see what you do. I just want to picture you in that jersey. Once we know the jersey number for sure, I just want to see it. Then we've got Isaiah McKinney. The impression on McKinney is a very different one from Jacobs. Jacobs is a little bit more outwardly confident, I think, than McKinney is. McKinney, very soft-spoken, very self-assured, as we'll see here in a second, but he just gives off a little bit of a different vibe than Jacobs does, and it was cool to see the contrast back-to-back. Now, speaking of that confidence, toward the end of his press conference, he was asked what he thought about the pressure of signing a big free agent deal. And, here's what he had to say.
He said, I'm here to perfect my craft, so I don't really feel any pressure ever. I just try to go out there and play my best and compete. And, like I said, I'm trying to win at the end of the day. So, and I know what that takes to be able to win games and, you know, win championships. So I don't ever really feel pressure. I know that, you know, a lot of these guys in here are super motivated and that are hungry, and I'm the same way. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun time.
I use this quote because versions of it came up a few times during his conversation with reporters. He's not really looking at this as a situation where, like, I've always wanted to be a top 5 paid safety, or I was really trying to get the most money that I could out here. I'm sure those things are true, or at least, you know, partly true. He wants to get the money that he could, but just looking at it more of he looks at his career more of as an opportunity to get to do the things that he really wants to do and get to keep working at them and learning and connecting with coaches who can help him do those things. So that is really what his motivation was heading into this free agency process. So that makes him a pretty ideal fit, I think, for the Packers, because Jeff Hafley has talked about his desire to work with those kind of players, but also to help them be the best versions of the player that they want to be. And on a related note, there is a coaching connection for McKinney here in Green Bay. Derek Ansley, who's on the Packers coaching staff as their pass game coordinator, worked with McKinney in college. A lot of people had connected those dots already, as potentially a recruiting point for the Packers. The funny thing is, it was not something he was aware of.
Not really. I didn't even know that he was here until I did the interview with Kay. And, you know, she mentioned it, and then that's when I figured out that he was even here. So I had no clue that he was even here. Last time I knew that he was at the Chargers, but I didn't even know he was over here. So once I heard that, obviously, you know, it was something that I was happy about, and it definitely was something that you know, sparked interest for me big time.
So not necessarily a primary recruiting point for McKinney. He wasn't going out there looking to connect with his former college acquaintance there. But how does he actually fit with the Packers? He's been in touch with Jeff Hafley. He said in the interview that they had already had dinner the previous night, talked about his role and the things that he's done. He really said he just wants to do things that are best for the defense. He actually doesn't even think of himself primarily as a deep safety or a box safety or a slot guy.
It depends on the game. Like, for me, I'm more so like, whatever we need for that game, I want to go do. So, like, I try not to get too, like, focused on one spot. I never, like, try to box myself in. And I think that's what, you know, gives me the ability to be able to play in different spots in the defense and in any scheme and be able to do it at a high level. So that's kind of how I've always been. And you know, it's just, like I said, it's going to continue to improve. And I'm going to continue to learn more and you know, be better in different spots. And I know the coaches are going to, you know, help me to get to where I want to be.
Finally, and, you know, we can talk about the scheme stuff more as we, again, continue to learn more about McKinney and Jacobs stuff throughout the offseason. But I think this was a revealing quote about who he is as a person. Someone asked him what it was like to go through this whole free agency process and, you know, leave the Giants after they had an opportunity to franchise tag him or do whatever they were going to do with him, and then they didn't. Now he ends up in Green Bay. What was that whole process like? He took a second to make sure that he cleared up the idea that there were any hard feelings between himself and the Giants.
I just want to say shout out to, you know, the New York Giants, just for the 4 years that we had, you know, where they were special. Obviously went through a lot of ups and downs, but, you know, it's a team and an organization that, you know, is forever, you know, going to be in my heart. So, you know, all love to them, and I'm just glad to be here.
And I think that's an important thing to remember as fans and people who just root for the Packers. We have a different relationship to the game of football and to watching the Packers on Sunday than the teams on the field or than the players on the field even do. Even if they may be moving from one team to the next, that doesn't always mean that there were hard feelings as they left or even that there could have been hard feelings. It's just business a lot of times, and it sounds like that was very much the case for McKinney. He would have loved to stay in New York if that's how things worked out, but he's happy to move on and be where he is right now, and he doesn't really have any ill will toward the Giants now that he has moved on because, you know, they got him his start in the NFL. Things went pretty well for him there, and now he gets to move on and be one of the highest-paid safeties in the league. That seems like a win-win, even if it doesn't always work out to stay with the team that drafted you. So that's Jacobs, that's McKinney. The Packers, of course, made a couple other free agency moves this week. They re-signed Keyshawn Nixon. They re-signed Christian Welch, as the special teamer, who we'll talk about here in a second, and they've brought back A.J. Dillon. Where do things go from here? Let's take a second and kind of reset where we're at in free agency and the offseason as a whole. I don't know about the whole idea of waves of free agency or like what the difference is between the second wave and the third wave of free agency. Once the quote-unquote legal tampering period starts, free agency is on, and then it's just kind of the pecking order from there in my estimation of things. But the big money seems to be gone at that point. So if you want to call that the first wave of free agency, we're at least into the second, possibly the third round of free agency at this point. So what do the Packers need? What do they do from here? And who is out there potentially in free agency that they might be interested in exploring? In terms of needs, I think they still are looking probably for a linebacker, probably for another safety, and probably for a little bit at running back. Linebacker moves up a notch because the Packers got rid of one. They got rid of one of their starting linebackers, and you can quibble about that as to what Devondre Campbell's role is or was relative to Isaiah McDuffie at the end of the season, but he's gone now. The Packers have added back Christian Welch, who was exclusively a special teamer in 2023, but it's where it was essentially the last time we talked in depth about it. You've got your Quay Walker, you've got Isaiah McDuffie, and you really have opportunities beyond that. So they still have a significant need, I think, at linebacker. They still probably need another safety, maybe more of a box safety type player. As he said in his presser there, Isaiah McKinney is going to move around, but I still think you need a guy who's going to primarily be close to the line of scrimmage. You probably need a running back at some point, but when do you do that? You've got A.J. Dillon back on the ultra-rare fourth-year qualifying offer. I think I've seen this used like one other time. Basically, it's a veteran's minimum deal with some added benefits in there. It's so rare, I could not even find a concrete mention of it in the collective bargaining agreement. It's possible that I just missed it. It's several hundred pages of legalese, so if it's in there and I missed it, it's probably completely understandable. But it's not a big factor for what teams are doing to construct their rosters, put it that way. Basically, it amounts to a $1.1 million deal that could be worth another $1.3 million or so for Dillon. But now the running back position, you've got Josh Jacobs and you've got A.J. Dillon, but let's remember the lay of the land there on the contract stuff. Jacobs is on a four-year deal that's really maybe a two-year deal. And A.J. Dillon is on a one-year deal that's actually a one-year deal, and it, depending on how the rest of the offseason shakes out, could be just a deal that gets him to training camp and not beyond. The point is, if you want cost-controlled running back talent into 2026 and beyond, you probably are going to have to look to the draft. So let's talk about some of the Packers' options here. Linebackers are sparse. Basing this off the Athletic's top 150 free agents, you have one available at linebacker, and that is former Packers linebacker Chris Barnes. He's it, the only one out there, and if that's the only free agent option you got in the top 150, I'm going to go ahead and pass. No offense to Chris Barnes, but we've been through that story once before. If there was a limitation to Barnes' game, it was the overall athleticism there. I think fine as a player. But McDuffie already, I think, is ahead of him in terms of the athleticism there. So if they're going to be playing a similar role, just stick with McDuffie and look to the draft, I think, at that point. At safety, I got three possible options here with a fourth that you might sprinkle in. Julian Blackman, we mentioned him before. This is more of a follow-up, so really two options and one really kind of long-distance pipe dream option. He seemed when we mentioned him last, kind of like a poor man's Isaiah McKinney. So as far as Blackman goes, I would consider myself out of the running at this point. If you look to what he could bring, though, if you just want some redundancy with McKinney, maybe you try to get him on a really cheap deal and see what happens there. Some older options, at least one older option, Tashawn Gibson, played more than 400 snaps in the box or in the slot combined in 2023. He is 31. So potentially a little bit of a lower cost option there, though he's not going to be a long-term option. You're still probably looking to add somebody in the draft if you want to go that direction. Jordan Fuller of the Rams recently is another possible option there. He played more than 300 snaps in the box or slot in 2023. He's only 26 years old, so perhaps a little bit better of a value than Gibson was. And then if you want to go for a really kind of weird big swing option, this is probably a pipe dream, but MJ Hurley mentioned it as some sort of source reporting on Twitter, so take this for whatever it's worth, but Micah Hyde could be an option there. He famously played a very different role for the Bills than he did with the Packers. When he was with the Packers, he was primarily a slot corner, which is a quasi-safety depending on how your defense works in the modern NFL. If you want to categorize it as a safety, a lot of the draft stuff categorizes guys who do that as a safety. But the point is he played near the line of scrimmage a lot with the Packers. And over the course of his time with the Bills, he began to move slightly more toward a role where he played what he did with the Packers than just playing primarily as a deep safety as he did early in his Bills career. It's not a lot. It's not even comparable to what he did in Green Bay, but the game has changed a little bit. Maybe it could be an option if you really squint. I don't know. That it seems like a stretch, but I think it was at least worth mentioning because there was some source reporting on that suggested it could be a possibility. If you're looking at the draft, That's really the only place to find a safety, or not a safety, a running back at this point. And even then, I think we've got to temper expectations, put it that way. I just have started draft work, but I compiled what I'm calling the capture list. I took the top 250 players on the consensus mock draft board as the data set that we're going to be working with, figuring that people who move in and out of those top 250 at this point are not really going to be major risers in the draft. So this is the list that I'm going to be working from. If you look at it really as the top 200, it's probably going to be basically set anyway. In any case, looking at the top 150 of those 250 names, there are only 11 running backs in the consensus mock draft at that point. And there are no running backs at all in the top 50 players. Only tight ends, linebackers, and quarterbacks had fewer players in the top 150 than running backs did. So this year's class is not exactly flush with running back talent, though. If there is running back talent available, it's going to be in the latter portions of the draft, which the Packers seemed poised to exploit now that they've really taken care of the top end of their draft, their depth chart there. Kind of on a related note, you could see what people are saying when there's reports that come out that the Packers are pretty high on Emmanuel Wilson. If you tack on to the end of that report, just one slight alteration, that the Packers really like Emmanuel Wilson because they've seen what's coming out in the draft this year, that report makes a whole lot more sense, because there really isn't that much coming down the pike. There are a few guys out there, but again, this is not a running back heavy class, and I don't know if we're really going to see that many running back heavy classes going forward, but this one seems especially sparse, especially toward the top end of that draft. I mean, running backs going outside the first round or in the first round has become incredibly rare the further we've gone on here, but there's no chance of it happening this year, it seems, just given where things look to be shaping up in the draft and with who's going to be available. I would not be counting on that at all. So a linebacker, the ship has probably sailed in free agency. Safety, still some options out there if the Packers want to hedge their bets a little bit against the draft, which I think would be a pretty good idea. And running back, don't even bother in free agency, and the draft is going to be looking for day three. But I think that if you're going to invest with the state of the Packers depth chart right now, that is the place to be doing it anyway, which is good because that's about all that's available in this year's draft class. So I've got for you in this episode of Blue 58. I appreciate you tuning in. I'd appreciate it even more if you'd take a second and share this episode with someone you think would enjoy it. That's going to help more people find the show and get more people involved in this conversation you and I are having about the Green Bay Packers, which in turn is going to help all of us, me included, become smarter Packers fans. And as I always say, smarter Packers fans are better Packers fans, and better Packers fans are what we all want to be. I'm your host, John Meerdink. We'll see you next time on Blue 58.